From the Land Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 17th day of November 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in our program, we'll be joined by Eric Snodgrass from Agrible to take a look at the weather forecast. Along the way, we'll update you on some information from the Farm Service Administration, the FSA. We'll talk with Steve Peterson. He's the acting administrator from Washington, D.C., and we'll do all that right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Last night I was in Southern Illinois with Mike Zuzulo and Todd Hubbs, Wayne Nelson, and Kurt Kimmel, courtesy of the Wayne County Farm Bureau and University of Illinois Extension, and certainly and most assuredly my Ron Gray, who is with Country Financial. Thanks to them. And Mike, it was good to see you last night down in Jeff. I appreciate you coming over there.
That was a great meeting, and hats off to Ron and his crew for putting another good one on. It was a really nice meeting. We had low prices to talk about, but somehow we managed to laugh a lot and have a lot of fun, and hopefully did some good for the farmers and ranchers down there.
Yeah, you know, I think that was the biggest surprise. When you talk about 320 corn and 920, 940 soybeans or whatever, the where we're at, and you can still have fun doing it, it surprised me. But it seemed like that meeting went really well last night. And I hope, and I think we will, duplicate some of that at the Farm Assets Conference too. However, I don't know that any of us were thinking there would be a nickel or 18-cent jump, depending on when you're talking about corn or soybeans in the marketplace today. What was it that pushed us higher?
No, I think you're right. I think we all talked about the ground is very fertile for short covering, and there's already fundamentals out there earlier this week in the form of wheat conditions and corn harvest progress and weather in Argentina, and the fact that the funds are the third biggest short in terms of managed money shorts on record coming into this Friday's Commitment to Traders report. And we also knew that there was a cattle on feed report today that's probably going to show big numbers, and boy, did it show big placement numbers especially. I think, Todd, it was just a matter of timing. Would the trade want to look at this fertile ground, these more friendly fundamentals in light of the weakening dollar and the stronger crude, sooner before Thanksgiving or wait till after Thanksgiving and pick up more of the seasonality of the markets, which happen between Thanksgiving and Christmas, and then for the wheat especially after the Christmas holiday as we get closer to the winter seedings report. I think to answer your question, what really turned us into a new weekly, new two-weekly high in the beans was, number one, the corn led the market higher. The beans were able to get charged up from that. In other words, the beans needed the gate to be opened for them by the corn or the wheat, and both participated, but corn really did a good job by coming up and taking out its weekly highs from Monday. And I think this was mostly predicated on fresh South American news. While Brazil is getting caught up on planting, it looks like there is some expectation now that their corn crop especially is going to be down in Mato Grosso 20% roughly versus last year, and that's the biggest corn province for the country. And now we still have Argentina. After talking about it for 5 days, they haven't gotten any rain, and they're looking pretty cold and pretty dry for the foreseeable future. And I think these were probably the biggest features that finally caused some short covering ahead of the Commitment Traders report today.
And while Todd Hubbs told us last night that this word La Nina in South America, and it mostly is for Argentina, and that's where we are talking about having some problems, is kind of a 50-50 proposition as to good or bad years after the fact. 50-50 this early in the season really does spur the market higher because they have to build in some kind of cushion just in case.
That's right, and I think this is where it goes back to there is a lot of split differences between how you look at La Nina. I think what the trade is looking at is that it can have an impact when it's strong, and the U.S. government put out earlier this week, again, something that really didn't get much traction at all. They put out that it was the strongest for this time of year, I think, in 6 years. The private forecaster I work with, a new one out of Florida, that I have a really nice new relationship with is suggesting to me that the models, the science behind understanding El Nino and La Nina is about the best it's been since we've started working in this area, and that the confidence levels for what it may or may not do to some of the crop areas of South America maybe are a little bit better in terms of forecasting. And I think maybe that, too, is playing off of it. But as Wayne said, he made the joke, and it was a very timely joke, about the fact that trading off of La Nina and just the word coming across Twitter is actually being done right now. So the funds at least participate in this, and right now the wind is at your back when it comes to La Nina and the prices.
Well, you just keep seeing La Nina, and if that's making the marketplace higher, we'll keep it up here. and we'll see if that game that Wayne wanted to start a couple of weeks ago, it works as well.
That's right. That's right. It's a perfect game for the holidays, right?
It is a good game for the holidays. Okay, so the cattle and feed numbers that came out this afternoon, did you get a chance to take a look at them?
Yeah, they were big. I mean, we were expecting big because of what happened after the November feeders went off yesterday and the continuation of the January today down over 200 points. But we came in with placements 110%. The average trade guess was 107.7. We're talking about 11.3 million head of cattle now on feed at this point. And that was, again, the November 1 on feed, 106 versus estimates of about 105.5. We are hitting some big, big numbers. What's this mean? Well, it makes sense why the folks down in Jeff and also in that Fairfield area, we're talking about basis flipping 30 cents from going to about 15 under to 15 over at some of the local ethanol and end user plants. Well, we've got good livestock demand. We've got good feed demand. And we've got good ethanol demand, and I think this is something that has been underpinning this market starting this past week, was the basis in the cash.
I know you're headed back across probably the great state of Missouri now. Thanks for coming over from Atchison, Kansas, to Jeff last night for our meeting, and good luck getting the rest of the way home.
I got to tell you, Todd, your station and you and what you do is absolutely amazing, and I drive just about anywhere for you and that station because it's been so good to me.
Well, thank you so much, and you know what? You're going to drive again because you'll be back in El Paso. If folks want to look that one up, it's on, what, the 16th day of December, I believe, so they can look that
that'll
up.
That'll be a great meeting, yeah.
That'll be in El Paso. They can look it up. It's on the calendar of events now, and good travels to you, and thanks for coming to Jeff last night, and we'll talk to you again next week. Well, actually, we will not talk to you next week because
that's what I was going to say. Have a great Thanksgiving, sir, yeah. And all the listeners too.
All right, bye bye now.
Bye bye.
That, of course, is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report next Tuesday. I want you to join us in Normal at the Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. That for the Farm Assets Conference. I've been talking to you about this for 5 weeks. The days are now upon us, and we're doing really well with sign-up. But if you want to be there, we hope that you'll finish up that registration, and not later, but today, at willag.org, farmassetsconference.com, 800-898-1065. We will allow you to walk in that morning. It's just $35. Either way, we look forward to having you at the Farm Assets Conference on Tuesday. Again, that's in Normal, Illinois, at the Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. It's right there, just off the Illinois State University campus in Bloomington Normal. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Well, if you've been looking for something good to say about the agricultural commodity as it relates to corn, you have not found a lot, but there are a couple of things. Gary Schnitke follows the price of fertilizer, and I suspect if you've already put anhydrous ammonia on, you know this, but anhydrous ammonia at the lowest price since 2008. An interesting little tidbit. Nice data.
Yeah, so we've been looking at nitrogen prices in Illinois production cost report, releases those twice a week or twice a month. And so far this fall, they've been averaging right at $400 a ton. That's $100 less than last year. And as you said, it's less than we've seen since 2008. So that's a good thing.
What do some of those numbers look like over that high-priced era?
So we hit highs over $1,100, have $1,100 an acre back in 2008. And we've been up and down since then, but in 2012, we were at right at $850 a ton. And sort of since then, we've been coming down a bit. Last year, we was at 504, and in 2015, the year before that, we was at 556. So we've been coming down since then. And again, that helps with some of the cost, particularly as it relates to corn.
And so you also talked a little bit about using the MRTN. This is the nitrogen rate calculator. A little bit late at this point because most of the anhydrous is either probably on or nearly on, but still something to consider.
Yeah, and again, if we're putting anhydrous on, we've probably got that done, but if you don't have it all on, there's still that spring application as well. If you look at MRTNs, then these would be from the web tool. It's below 200 pounds per acre in northern and central Illinois, and substantially so. In central Illinois, it's right at 186 pounds per acre. And if you give a DAP credit for that, you're probably putting 170 pounds of N on. And a lot of people probably are well over 200 pounds per acre, and there's significant cost savings there.
Yeah, so the MRTN is the maximum return to nitrogen rate. It's the N-rate calculator that's online. Several of the Corn Belt states have gone together, put all of their data in one place. But data from the state of Illinois segregates for Illinois when you use the MRTN. Same thing for Iowa, Indiana, other Corn Belt states. And it's a way to optimize yield, not maximize, but to optimize yield or maximize the return from nitrogen, which is their highest priced input.
Yep. And again, what they're doing is looking at these trials of nitrogen and finding the rate that optimizes or maximizes the economic return. That generally isn't the highest yield, but it's pretty close to it. It's well over 90% in most cases. So in most years, the MRTN will also result in the highest yield.
Yeah, so the point here is that if you use the nitrogen rate calculator, you're not only saving money, input cost, because the cost of nitrogen is lower, but you're likely to see that you can put a lower rate on and still maximize your yield.
The lower rate isn't going to cut yields much, and if it does, you're still in a profit maximizing situation.
Hey, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnittke is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can read more from him on the Farm Doc Daily website. Look for the article from November the 14th. It's titled Nitrogen Fertilizer Prices and Costs Lower for 2018. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We're now joined by Eric Snodgrass. He's at Agrible. By the way, Eric will be at our Farm Assets Conference on Tuesday. Get those tickets right now. willag.org, 800-898-1065. And walk-ins, of course, are welcome. Doors open at 9:30 a.m. at the Marriott Hotel and Conference Center in Normal for the Farm Assets Conference. Thanks for being with us this afternoon, Eric. Looking forward to having you in Normal, but we probably better get right to it. What do you see in the weather forecast?
All right, Todd. So I think we got a lot of things to really kind of digest here that we've recently seen in terms of ag in the United States. And the big picture thing I want to talk about first really deals with a quick analysis I did just a couple of days ago. You know, when the USDA comes out with a yield of over 175 bush per acre on corn, you know, some of the things that I started to wonder here, I was like, wow, that just seems so incredibly high. But a little bit of simple analysis of the data would show that if we removed 2012 from the data set that shows us year-by-year yields, a trend line on our data would actually have put 2017 at about 173.5 bushel per acre corn yields, which means next year, expecting 175 bushbreaker corn as an average yield is actually what we would expect to be normal. And that's really important as we look forward to these upcoming growing seasons. So with that as a backdrop, let's take a look at what's going on in the last 30 days. You know, we've had a very wet eastern half of the Corn Belt, and we have another system that's coming through, taking shape right now over the Central Plains. And as that system evolves over the next couple of days and starts to move toward the east, it's really going to bring a pretty big shot of rain here tonight and into tomorrow for Central Illinois, and then pushing to the east over the next few days. Now, what's interesting is on the back side of this low, the winds are going to be very strong and from the north and northwest, which means any leftover precipitation in what we call the wraparound region of one of these low pressure systems may come into northern Illinois as maybe a little bit of light, very wet snow. Certainly going to see that for parts of Wisconsin and Michigan after the system passes through. So this isn't a big snowfall event. It's just saying we're going to get cold enough on the backside to actually see some of the white stuff falling. What we should really expect here in Illinois is after the system passes through, like Saturday into Sunday, we're going to see some really, really windy conditions from the north after that. Now, the good news is, beyond this, we've got a relatively dry pattern setting up. So much of next week looks pretty dry. No major weather systems that we're able to see right now coming through on Thanksgiving. So overall, that's very favorable. Now, remember, that's still 6 to 7 days away, which means we'll have to keep a close eye on if anything changes. But right now, I'm not seeing anything major impacting travel around Thanksgiving. But I want to take that and discuss the pattern, the overall flow of the atmosphere. And there's two big things I want to talk about. First is Canada. We've got great snowpack and a lot of cold air kind of lodged over Canada. And that's important to see because as the weather systems evolve in the coming days and weeks, we can unleash that cold air into the eastern half of the country and the northern part of the country very easily. The second thing is this. A year ago right now, we were staring at what we call a very zonal jet stream flow pattern. That's where the jet stream is really coming from the west to the east, not meandering north or south into big troughs and ridges. And that set up our whole flow pattern for the entirety of winter. Now, what do I mean by all of this? Well, if the jet stream is really wavy, in other words, lots of troughs and ridges out in the Pacific Ocean, well, that tends to set us up with a much more active weather pattern in the central states and the potential for more colder weather for the winter. When it's strong zonal flow from the Pacific, we tend to have a more mild winter with a lot more rain like we had last year. So I'm just kind of saying, you know, for this winter, we've got to set up for at least some potential to get some really cold weather coming in here at times. So I'm watching that for most of the rest of this winter. Another big feature I want to be paying attention to, the last 30 days or so have been very dry for parts of Missouri and Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and eastern Texas. And that's a region I'm going to be watching closely for the next several months, because if we start to see some drought developing there, that could be a potential kind of problem spot come March, April, May for the potential for having some southern Corn Belt kind of drought issues that could migrate north. Now, it's just something I'm watching. Just want to make you aware of it. We'll keep updating on that every single week as this season continues to play out. And quickly, if we take a trip down to South America, Brazil's growing regions are forecast to be very, very wet in the near term, especially in parts of Mato Grosso and Goiás. The southern regions are dry, and both of those things are actually very favorable for the crop in South America. But right now, they're still pretty far behind in terms of planting. That compared to the five-year average, they're about 10% behind as a country. And where I think this is really going to bring in some pressure, as we've been talking about, is with that safrinha crop, that second crop, which will be a corn crop. So overall, Brazil is not hurting, but it's not as ideal as it was last year, which means that the probability of this year having another record-setting year in terms of yields and production are getting to become less and less and less with time. So we'll just keep a close eye on Brazil, but the short-term weather forecast is actually very good in terms of their soybean production there. So yeah, a lot of stuff to be looking at here, but it's all stuff we just got to keep a perspective on as we move throughout our winter and the South American growing season.